to another episode of Elite Rugby Banter. Today we have a two-man special featuring myself, Paul, and my very comfortable-looking co-host, Ant. Ant, how are you doing?
I'm very horizontal and it's lovely. So that comfort is the word of the day. But yeah, otherwise doing very well. I'm glad that summer's showing its face again in Cape Town. We had a week of very wintry weather, which is making a lot of us very apprehensive towards winter.
Yeah, we at least had a good weekend. We had a very miserable-ish summer week, and then the sun came out for the weekend. But yeah, it's been a month since we last had our podcast, and a lot has happened in the world of rugby. Some that you're keen to talk about. I know you're very keen to talk about the Sharks losing, England winning, just some of the all the things that you enjoy in rugby. But
it's just, yeah, it was a very stressful weekend. I've had very mixed emotions supporting the English, and I didn't really know how I felt about it. Particularly cheering at the end, I felt unclean. You know, it's like one of those like bad decisions you make in Boston. You're like, I know I probably shouldn't be doing this. I'm kind of enjoying it, but I don't feel like I should be enjoying it.
That's a good way to describe it. So, would you say that you were supporting England just because of the way that Ireland have been going on about them being the best in the world?
Yeah, completely. No, it was definitely through no love of England itself. It was very much just to try and bring the Irish down a peg and to try and give the Scots a hope of winning the Six Nations. Obviously, they hurt their home chances pretty well before that game started. Because otherwise, it would have been a very interesting weekend coming up. But no, it was two-pronged. One, to try and bring the Irish down a notch, but also to try and build up the Scots. You know, that's how these cookies crumble, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a shame that Andrew's not here to defend his beloved Scots, but you know,
I don't know what it is. He's been on his date for like 3 days. I mean, surely at some point he's got to get out of the bush.
He seems like he's just stuck in the bush. However that works. But yeah, so the last time we spoke was after two rounds of Six Nations, and now we've had two more with one to come this weekend. As Ant alluded to, Scotland have fallen down the pecking order a little, but they still have a chance to take it all if they can somehow win in the last game. But more importantly, England would have to, what is it? Yeah, you tell me what the permutations are, Ant.
I mean, I think if it's just, Scotland are probably the least likely. They've got to put a stupid amount of points on Ireland, so that's just very unrealistic. And then, yeah, I mean, obviously Ireland, they're the driving seat. They need like 1 point, which kind of makes a mockery of the bonus point system, which they could, you know, lose two out of five games. England win four out of five, and Ireland still win the whole competition. So I mean, we're having a little bit of chat in the group about the bonus points. We can maybe dive into that a little bit later. But yeah, for England to win, obviously Ireland need to lose. England will need the help of a bonus point. They don't need one necessarily. France can also still do it, but they need a very big win for points difference and for bonus points, and then to hope Ireland doesn't. So it's getting a bit more dubious. But I think what the Italians will be ruining the most is the fact that they're not out the woods in the wooden spoon yet.
Right.
You know, that they're only, 4 points clear of Wales. So they need to get at least a bonus point in this game to make sure that they don't get the wooden spoon, because that would be a really unfair result for them. I mean, I think they've played the much better rugby and had a much stronger showing throughout this tournament than Wales have.
Yeah, sure. I mean, they've won one, drawn one, and Wales obviously lost four out of four, and yet they're only 4 points ahead. So, as you say, the bonus points.
But even the games that they've played, you know, they were really competitive against England, obviously should have beaten France. You know, they haven't really been outplayed. Whereas Wales, you know, got beaten quite comfortably by France. Well, I suppose Wales, they were there and thereabouts against
Yeah, I mean,
England.
It was after 65 minutes, even this weekend against France, they were in the lead. And then France scored two late tries. So yeah, there's a little bit of
they're having a blowout, yeah.
Like couple of the players, like Rio Dias looking pretty good. I think getting Costello game time at number 10 sort of serves them well going forward. But yeah, they've lost 4 out of 4. There's nothing you can say or do about that to make it too much better.
Weird way, it feels like they've lost a lot more experience than Italy have. The Wales still have guys like George North and Josh Adam rattling around. Like, it's not like they've got an inexperienced team, but it just feels like they've lost. Whereas the Italian veterans, guys like Lamoureux and Gobbi, they're still like only 24. They hints in theory, but they've got a decent number of caps and they're established players in the team. Whereas, Josh, again, Adam Beard, just they're not exactly leaders in the team. They're just kind of going about their business despite being, having huge tallies of caps. And I think losing like a Dan Biggar has been far more influential for them.
It's an interesting perspective because guys like Adam Beard and Josh Adams are like British Lions and they're considered pretty strong players on a global level even. But like you say, they haven't been as influential. They're not the maybe the position like Adams on the wing, Beard being I don't know, not as influential as a lock as you could get. They're just not able to bring the team up using their experience and perhaps their even talent. But very
I
exciting
mean,
for Italy.
yeah, no, I mean, it's great for Italy, but quickly, just last one on Wales. Their new captain, Jenkins, like, do you think he's doing? I mean, it was just a very left field call, in my opinion. I mean, I didn't even know that he was capped by Wales at the point. I haven't heard of him since he, got thrown out of a Springbok lineup huddle, under 20s
Oh,
lineup huddle.
how
It's
is that?
just very weird for him to be picked as a captain. And, do you think maybe that's part of the leadership gap?
Mean, he's what, 21 or whatever. I think part of the reason we know very little about him is because he doesn't even play in the URC. He plays for Exeter, I think. And yeah,
What?
he came out of nowhere. Doesn't play in Wales.
That's even more bizarre.
Like they have much more experienced players. I think it felt almost like one of those weird Eddie Jones decisions where you just put it like, it's almost like a Hail Mary. You just hope that this is like the most amazing move and it comes off, but you're not act like it's not the smart play. It's not the calculated, smart move.
Yeah, I kind of feel like they did that with Jack Morgan, and it did kind of pay off.
Yeah, fair
But
enough.
he's was a fair bit older and a fair bit more experienced. I mean, a 21-year-old that's not even playing in the country is a very odd pick, I would think. I mean, it's a good segue to quickly just touch on who do you think the Springbok captain should be going forward? Obviously, there's a bit of chat about that coming up in media today. Tsukalisi obviously playing in France, not based in South Africa. Should the Springbok captain be based locally? Because obviously he wasn't part of the lineman camps. He hasn't been, he's just not nearly as accessible to the coach. He only gets released in the actual windows. So is there a lot to be said for having your captain based locally? It's not like we've got a shortage of options.
It's a
The
tricky one.
Kanyo even it's there.
Like, I think for me, Khaleesi's been the captain for so many years now. If he's in the camp, I feel like he's going to feel like he's the captain. But the fact that he's not going to be there for most of these alignment camps, the fact that he's playing overseas and he'll play a certain number of games does provide issues. And that's why I think Rossi has come out and said he's not guaranteed to be captain. I think if they can, they should keep him as captain. But I understand the reasons which have already been said, which perhaps mean that they're going to look for someone new, especially, if they sort of split the squads a little and against Ireland, it's, leaving some of the overseas players, not including them and sort of only trying to include them in the rugby championship. I don't know how it's going to work, but definitely we have to think about someone else. And if we're only considering locally based players, I'm not sure. I still don't really, I haven't seen enough from as a captain to be comfortable. Bongi obviously has captained in the past, but he hasn't really done his prospects any good with his Sharks captaincy in the last couple of weeks. And Eoin
I
is
think, I mean,
not available. Is he available?
Evans,
I mean, he's Sharks based.
he's part of the camps,
I
but he
mean,
was also, I mean, I think he's meant to be back soon. He was walking around pretty fine when I saw him the other day. But I mean, he's us when we were looking through all that Springbok list you shared the other day. Like, he's got quite a number of captaincies, like for the box.
Yeah.
just quite surprised about. I mean, he's like captain the box more than 10 times or something, which is interesting. But just back on the Khaleesi thing, I think if there ever were to be a player that would be fine to be the leadership in the squad without being captain, it's Khaleesi. I mean, when he moved to the Sharks, that was the role he took on, and it didn't sound like there was any egos there. I mean, even within the Springbok squad, like, he's hardly this kind of dominant force of a leader that needs to be in charge, if that makes sense. Like, he's very happy to defer. He's very happy to acknowledge when he doesn't know things. So I think if there were a player that, you know, would accept the logic of it and step back, you know, you'd still get all the cultural benefit from him, but not lose, but, you know, then not have the kind of an ego rub. I think it's Khaleesi that could pull that off very comfortably. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, even when, you know, the injury cloud that hung over his head, it wasn't guaranteed that he was even going to play in the World Cup, but just having him there in the squad would have been great. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, Vermeulen has done a lot of the captaincy in the past, and he's not going to be available. But there are enough options that it doesn't worry me. It's not like if we can't have Kiese as a captain, we're going to lose a lot. So,
Yeah, completely. And yeah, it's very much the least of, not that I don't actually have any, but I lie. I have one Springbok worry. My
what?
only worry about the Springboks is that they start experimenting two tests too early with new players and new squads and new tactics.
So you want us to just go full throttle against Ireland and then
I want to
perhaps.
go absolutely full throttle. Well, I think we have to, you know, again, like, Ireland are the best team in the world, so you can't start experimenting against them. You have to put out your best team and play as hard and as well as you can. And then, you know, we've got the Portugal test and rugby championships and thereafter. But I think for that, those first two tests, I think we have to go full ball. Also, just for the listener's sake, my tongue was very, very firmly planted in my cheek when I called Ireland the best team in the world.
Very firm. Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think it's an important even just like a psychological thing to beat a team like Ireland after losing to them in the
Yeah.
World Cup. It's a big one.
But we're on a 3-game losing streak against them.
Yeah, exactly. It's
You
been
know, so it's
it used to be
yeah,
weird to lose
three.
against them. Like the first
Yeah,
few times we
exactly.
beat them, we lost to them in the sort of mid 2020 or whatever, 2010s, mid 2010s is what I was trying to say. When we first lost to them, it was weird, and then it started happening way too often.
Yeah, that game with Pat Lambie got knocked out. That was what the first time we've ever lost to them at home,
Well,
I think.
maybe could have been. I mean, even the series where Komrenk was playing, and
That was the same series.
was
Yeah,
that the
that
same
first
one?
game was the first game we ever lost
Okay.
at home to Ireland, I think.
Yeah.
And then obviously we lost to them in the game that ended Alistair Coetzee's tenure. And I mean, that we got pumped by them. It was like, what, 38-0 or 38-3 or something stupid.
Well, that's
And then obviously two close losses since. But the point is, it's what, we're two out of the last six.
yeah,
So
not
it's not a
good.
great record. So I think all egos and stuff aside, just to balance that ledger, I think it's important. But it's one thing that I really, really do hope Russie's, you know, as much as he says he doesn't listen to outside noise or doesn't think about oppositions or media, I really hope he does take this personally and he does put it up on the wall and takes the ego on to this and takes it seriously.
Yeah, I mean, Ireland obviously, like, in my head, I always have a perception that this time of the year when the Northern Hemisphere teams visit, they're usually so weak and, like, they have very little chance. But of course, Ireland beat New Zealand in that tour just before the World Cup. So they have that recent experience of, you know, going to one of the most difficult places to go. But it's not South Africa, so I'm still confident. And, like you say, I hope it's the both of the strongest teams possible. You know, there is a chance that Ireland might rest players too, so hopefully that doesn't happen. Two of the strongest teams and the best team
That's
rest.
not really their thing though, to be fair. They're very much not a rotational team. They're kind of a win everything at all costs
That's true.
type team. And I mean, even with Sexton, you know, they played him basically into the ground. Like, there's no need to give him that much game time at that point in his career. But, you know, they just were like, every game we could play our best team type thing. Which, so, you know, to an extent I can respect. You know, Test rugby is the pinnacle. It shouldn't be about building. But that's, you know, that's a debate for maybe another part about the Irish versus the African mentality, World Cups versus winning percentage. But speaking of Ireland, are they, you know, are they broken now? Are they, is their kind of confidence shattered? Are they shown to be fragile? Or was it just England getting up for it on the day?
I don't think they're as broken as France are post World Cup, which is maybe obvious to say given some of France's results and just general performance. But they definitely didn't have an amazing performance against England. So England play well. I think it's fair to say England got up for the game, but Ireland would still be disappointed, I think, in their own performance. Like they still were in the game, obviously, until the very last minute. There were some really good performances and a couple of good tries, like James Lowe getting on the scoreboard twice. But I think that they're still perhaps, missing someone like Sexton. Before this game, they've looked fine, but this perhaps this was their first real test and they didn't pass it. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, before this, they played France, who are not the same team that we've seen before. I think, we were concerned when, well, we were surprised when France was so toothless against Ireland, but we've seen since then, they lost. They've just been poor. It's really not been a good team. So, should have lost to Scotland, did lose to Italy. Sorry, should have lost to Scotland, should have lost to Italy. Yeah, cool. They pumped a really weak Wales team. But it'll be interesting to see what they do against England next week. So yeah, I think it's fair. And I think also, like, this is the first time that a team that's physically got up for the game has played Ireland since the World Cup. And that the Irish forwards, as much as you mentioned in 1986, I thought it was their forwards that just kind of got pushed around a little bit more. I didn't really notice much about many of the Irish forwards. Joe McCarthy used, being the talk of the town, the Six Nations. He was pretty anonymous. And so I think that the English forwards really got up to that game and were very dynamic and busy around the rucks and stuff. And I think that probably more pressure there on Ireland than I think necessarily the backline didn't look slick.
Yeah,
And I
no.
think that's always kind of been the risk to Ireland is that if you get in the way of their shape, then they're a lot more vulnerable.
But it's interesting because, like, I agree with you completely. Like, the forwards didn't quite match up as we maybe would have expected. But like, not much has changed. Like, they don't have any obvious players missing. But yeah, it's so you mentioned Joe McCarthy, one of your favorites. I know Itoje. I would say Itoje had a better game than him. But that's not maybe asking that much. You would expect. I mean, McCarthy's still a relative youngster. But the team is not much that much different. But again, like you said, it shows that they can get knocked out of their game. And if South Africa can do that, then that's very much an area where South Africa can expose Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, man for man, I think South Africa are better than England and also just better systematized.
Yes.
I think, like, man for man, South Africa is better than Ireland as well, but Ireland's system makes them a lot better than the sum of their parts. I think if you took any of those Irish players and dropped them into the South African team, they wouldn't be nearly as effective. Whereas I think if you took a lot of South African players, they could probably adapt better to the Irish system. But that's, just the way that the two teams approach games. It would be the same with the All Blacks. I think the All Blacks, particularly this current version, at least the one until the last year, was far more pressure on the individuals to perform to their individual standards than, the team playing well as a whole. But yeah, it's going to be very interesting when they come in. I'm excited for that. But are you giving Scotland no hope of taking Ireland next weekend? What does your English hat say? Does your English hat say that
My
the Scottish will
English.
deliberately lose just to fight the English, or are you quietly confident in the Englishmen that you guys can take the Six Nations?
My English hat says this last weekend was like the big game, the one that they were targeting, the one that meant that it's been a success. So no matter what happens in the last weekend, I think England, the team and the management will be relatively happy with the progress made. But saying that, France looked vulnerable. It's a winnable game for sure. Even going to Paris and trying to win there. And Ireland,
Oh,
like
it's
you
in
put up.
Lyon or something, isn't it? It's not in Paris.
Oh yes, yeah. But because of the Olympics, I think it will definitely be somewhere else. Lyon is a great place to play, so hopefully that will favor the English somehow, being away. away from Paris. But I can't see Ireland losing to Scotland, unfortunately. I think even though England showed that there are potential cracks, I think Ireland just generally the way that they play somehow works against Scotland. And every time over the last few years that I've watched the Ireland Scotland games, it's just been a bit too comfortable. But saying that, I wouldn't say it's too obvious. We've seen bigger shocks even over the last couple of weeks.
No, I think I agree that, again, if we use the narrative that to beat Ireland you have to be abrasive, that's not Scotland's style, you know. They're not really a grindy team, and I think that's kind of what you need to be niggly and grindy at the right time to really throw Ireland off their ball, and Scotland just aren't really that. So yeah, I think that's why Ireland get a cleaner ride against them, maybe say against South Africa, Australia, sorry, South Africa, England, New Zealand. I think I'm definitely. If I had to say which game I'm going to trip up, and I would have said it's the England one,
Yeah,
not
for
the
sure.
Scottish one.
Yeah. Do you know what Scotland
And
needs?
yeah, I mean
Scotland needs some South African locks and some South African loose forwards. That's what they're missing. They've got some props,
yeah.
they've got some wings. They just need some big boys, some big locks and loose forwards in their team.
Yeah, that would, I think a proper South African hard blindside flanker would be helpful. Because, like, blindside flankers are very fluffy. I
Yeah.
mean, I think Jamie Ritchie had one of his better performances on the weekend. I've notably not been a fan of his, but he played well. But again, there's no Peter Seftatoya, you
He's
know.
just and he's just not that bulky. Like I feel if he was a South African loose forward, he would sort of be way down the pecking order. He would struggle to be a
Yeah.
bit like a URC first choice.
Yeah, because he's not bulky enough or abrasive enough to play blindside.
Yeah, more
You know, you'd be a
dynamic.
fine a, exactly. You know, if you don't want to be that lanky, you need to be like a Dayomani, which he doesn't play like that. You know, he plays like. But anyway, it was disappointing to see. I mean, it was such a the Scottish game was such a weird one because on the one hand you're so stoked for Italy, but I'm also like, oh, Scotland, you ruined it. Like.
They did really ruin it. Like they would have, they if they had won that, like you said, this weekend would have been a lot more interesting, I think.
Well, I mean, if they'd won that, imagine they'd beaten France the way they should have, and then won this game, which was, very doable. Like, I mean, look, full credit to Italy, they played incredibly well, but it was still only one score in it at the death, you know. So, like, Scotland were quite capable of beating winning that game, you know. And then suddenly they go into Ireland as the team in the driving seat, yeah, which would be very interesting, but alas, Scotland did the Scotland. I
So,
assume you've seen the video of Simon Zeebo chatting to Ryan Wilson, being like, "It's yeah, I'm just watching inevitably Scotland are going to stuff it up," and Ryan like kind of in his eye being like, "Ha ha ha, that would never happen," but he's very aware that
like the
it
sad
was a
realization.
likelihood. He's like, "Oh fuck, we probably are going to bottle it, aren't we?" So it was sad, but that's just the
So if you
beginning.
were. If you were thinking about the final weekend with an unbiased cap, would you say that Italy are favourites against Wales?
I mean, I assume they're playing in Wales, huh?
I think so. I'll just check for one second.
Yeah, well, I mean, the last time they played in Wales, Italy won, I think. So, look, Italy are definitely playing better rugby. As I said, they've had the better tournament. But I think Wales is one of those teams that it's hard to kind of ever write them fully off. Similarly, they're just kind of niggly. They can drag you down. It's hard to beat Wales. And again, Italy have just come off such a big high now. Like, are they have they had their celebrations? Kind of calling it a day because they've already, winning a draw is. Although if they win this, that will be their longest unbeaten streak in the Six Nations ever. So there's still a lot to play for, and hopefully, I mean, I think like hearing interviews with Lamaro, they do have bigger ambitions than just getting the odd scalp. So I really hope that the energy in the camp is driving towards a good result this weekend. But I think it's tough to call either team a favourite. And yourself?
It's always hard to write Wales off completely because they are capable of pulling out a performance, but I think Italy have shown enough that I don't know if they're favorites, but the odds are certainly a lot closer to, just at least being sort of neutrals or whatever, like evens. But I think they'll have the neutral fans backing, and the way that they've been playing under the new coach under Quesada has been a bit more promising. I think especially the centers this past weekend, Meninchelo and Brex, were pretty exciting. They're putting through like little chip kicks that are, working, and just the way that their backs are playing. I think it's just showing a bit more promise, but with a bit more structure. Like last year, we kept saying that Italy play in a way that is exciting, but it just didn't translate into results. So hopefully they're getting the balance a bit better this year. So if I had to put a bet on it, I probably wouldn't because it's too close. But yeah, I think Italy have a pretty good chance.
Yeah, I definitely think they have a. I would call it pretty close to even. I don't know if, who I'd say is the favorite, but I think it's, as you say, not something I'd bet on. I think it's too close to call there. I wouldn't be surprised at either result. England, France, what's your prediction that one?
I think with my English hat on, England all the way.
With your unbiased hat.
taking it
Your
off, I'm
risk analyst hat.
skeptical. I don't think England are there yet in terms of putting together two solid performances in 2 consecutive weeks. I think if England were at home, I would back England, but going to France, going to Lyon, I think France, despite poor performances this year so far, I think they should have enough to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I just finished watching the Squidge video on the France Italy game, which is very much worth a watch because it does touch on the changes in both teams. And I think the really interesting thing for France is they went from being the most kicking team and the longest kicking team to being the least kicking team and the shortest kicking team in the Six Nations, which is just a crazy switch up, especially if you watch any of the other videos about how they kind of attack is centralized around the long kicking game that creates that pressure. So it's just like, what are they suddenly doing? So it seems more than just like, oh, they're kind of a bit confused or social. It just seems like the fundamental tactical change, which is just not paying off at the moment. Whereas England, we can see what their change is. It's pretty clear. It's got its teething problems at times, but you're seeing the week-on-week improvement. And I mean, as an Englishman, they shouldn't be lacking motivation to go to France. But again, it's one of those ones I could see France getting up to once off and performing. And I mean, I think this is also, I think I'd say England are maybe 55, 45 favourites, slightly more than Italy are, but not significantly.
I think because this is also the last game of the weekend, like if somehow Scotland pull off a great win and England know exactly what they have to do in the final game, that would maybe give them a bit more, just a bit more of an incentive, a bit more reason to push themselves. But if not, if they're just playing for like second place, of course you always want to put together a good performance and you want to finish as high as possible. But without that, I think they might be a bit more satisfied with just a good performance.
Yeah, look, 4 out of 5 wins is still a really good return to England. I mean,
They would have snapped your hand off of that, I think, at the beginning of the tournament, right?
we were saying after the first two games, we're like, cool, this is England. This is England's 2 wins for the tournament.
Yeah, exactly.
The same 2 wins of the tournament they've got for the last 4 years or whatever. So they already have surpassed their previous 4 or 5 seasons best. That's a good return, but finishing on the same number of wins as the tournament winner would be a big turnout for them. I think they would be very stoked.
Yeah, so that's pretty exciting. And so finally,
Quick one before we get on that final game.
yeah.
Do you think, I mean, I don't know if you saw the stuff coming out, like Daniel's man of the match interview and stuff. It's very bitter in that camp. But I mean, I assume they took a lot of the press cuttings, put them on the walls rather than the players. But like, he basically just said a giant fuck you to all our doubters at the press conference. It's just a very weird stance. Like, I get it. Obviously, it's not nice being written also. It comes across as very Yeah, like backs against the wall. And it's similar to, remember Ellis Genge tweeted last year or the year before when people were like, because I mean, he was like, oh, all you fake fans, we don't want you or whatever. And you're like, it's just a very weird look to take. And, you know, whether he was aiming at the media, whether he was aiming at fans. But it's very, you know, to try and like, if it is a fan, it's very weird to like try and isolate your fans or push them away type thing.
Yeah.
And obviously it's dickish. Whereas, you know, if you look at the Springbok mentality, you know, they said we love all criticism because criticism means that fans care about us and they're engaged. You know, so we're not going to shy away from negative criticism. We're going to take it on. Whereas the English are like, well, you shouldn't be mean to us. That mentality. It's kind of like, it's a very weird one.
I mean, I didn't see that Benno interview that you're talking about, but I don't like that sort of attitude, like in any of the sports where, where you do really try to put just like back yourselves into opponents, like us against the world, that type of mentality. Like it does work sometimes, normally more in like a short-term situation where you can really get up for, short-term results. But I think it doesn't have a good long-term effect in terms of whether it's building your relationship with the fans or even the media. And I think, like you say, I think South Africa have previously been a bit more like that, where that's almost like a way that you think about the worst South African teams is where they're very abrasive and backs against the wall and they think it's us against the world. But the more recent iterations of the team and the more successful ones have really embraced, like you say, the criticism and being a lot ha or having a lot of just better relationships with the press, with the fans, with like everyone. So I don't think it's a good mentality to have. And I can't see it being good for England in the long run. So I think the quicker they
Yeah.
move out of that, the better.
It'll be interesting to see how that plays out in that narrative this round. But yeah, happy to jump onto the last game. Ireland, Scotland. What are the, you, I mean, you said you don't see it happening. I don't think I'm in much disagreement there. I think it's in Ireland, it ain't Paddy's Day weekend. They still need to go out and do the goods to secure the thing. I think this is probably the most predictable of the games, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'll definitely be supporting Scotland and
A
really,
hundred
really,
percent.
really hoping that they can, pull off a surprise. But it will be, yes, a pretty big surprise. And, all three games this past weekend were really close and really good. So I think if we can get three close games again this weekend, that would be great, including this one. But like you say, this is probably the one that is least even.
And I could definitely see Ireland having quite a big gap here. You know, I could see like a 35-20 type score line, which would be bitter sad. Yeah,
Alrighty.
so I think that wraps up about the Six Nations. Obviously, that's been the biggest kind of global talking point. But it certainly wasn't the tournament without the only tournament with share of upsets over the weekend. But yeah, probably the most exciting one that's going on elsewhere is the Super Rugby, which is now three rounds deep. I think we were thinking about doing a preview episode, but between that and draft and Phil just abusing me and the fantasy side, verbally as well as on the field, we kind of missed that. But it's been a cracking start. I mean, I don't even know how I'd pick up my favorite game so far, or what even my like kind of surprise team is. I mean, you've got, you know, the Chiefs rocking out fast, dropping down. Crusaders north from three. The Hurricanes are doing well. The Waratahs are doing well for a change. The Reds are looking sharp. Moana Pacifica got, you know, another win back over the Drua. So it's just, you know, a super competitive tournament. I mean, is there still an unbeaten team, or is it only the Hurricanes left? You know, the fact that there's only one team unbeaten by week three, it's crazy. What's your being kind of takeaways from Super Rugby so far before we get into some of the draft detail?
The games that I've managed to watch have been, some of the sort of, I don't know if there was a bit of a drop from last year, but this year, like I think, like you say, some of the Australian teams bringing it. Perhaps that's what we didn't see last year so much. Couple of big wins for the Australian teams over New Zealand teams already, especially with the Reds beating the Chiefs this last week. I think for me, the biggest surprise, even though they've lost so many players and gotten a new coach, is just seeing Crusaders lose 3 out of 3. That's almost unprecedented for us. Like the last time was 96. I think Antu had probably still in diapers. So that's just
So.
really weird to see. And yeah, but it makes it really exciting. You know, they still are reigning champs, so it looks more likely than not that we're gonna have new champions. Although saying that, you just need to get in the top eight to make the playoffs. So that is one of the drawbacks.
Yeah, we know that the Crusaders are very much a late season playoffs animal. So, look, I don't think it's going to surprise anyone if they do turn the ship around. But I think, you know, this is definitely the biggest overhaul they've had in terms of structures. Like, you know, you do normally see a fair bit of rollover in players, but to go with a new coach, and remember they lost all their assistants last year as well. So it's not just head coach, but they lost their forwards coach, and I think their backline coach as well. So it's they've really been stripped bare across the board, and you know, guys losing guys like Richard Mwanga, Sam Whitelock, Cody Taylor, those are kind of stalwarts of not just your team but the national team for many years. So it is a lot of rebuilding. They've been in luck with injuries, and I think a couple of games have been down to like their third or fourth choice halfback combination, which is not ideal. Yeah, so it's a shock to see them where they are. I think the least shocking result for me was the Drew one, but we did have a mini super in our group, and there was a lot less faith shown in the Drua than I was expecting, considering, you know, they with the Crusaders they lost year.
Yeah, they did. And that's been the only match that the Drua have won, unfortunately. Like you said, they lost to Moana Pacifica. That would have been disappointing for them. And I think in the first week, they went down to the Blues, which was a bit comprehensive, but I mean, that's going to be one of the most difficult games of the season. But I'm sure the Drua will pick up a couple of wins at least going forward for the rest of the season. And seeing Moana Pacifica improve, you know, we saw Julian Sevier this last weekend break the record for all-time top Super Rugby scorer. So that's good because someone whose name we can just not mention at all used to have the record. And yeah, I mean, having Sevier at 12 to replace. You know, they had Levi Emoa there last season, who, by all accounts, has been pretty poor for the Crusaders so far this year. Hasn't been a terrible like-for-like replacement.
Yeah, I mean the Moana Pacifica's team is interesting. You've got guys like Kepu and Laliafano on the bench. It'll be interesting to see if those guys are just there as kind of mentors, if they do still get some kind of frontline game time as the tournament goes on. But they've definitely been, I think, probably the one of the surprise packages. I mean, they pushed the Highlands really close in the first game. I can't remember who they played this weekend, but they were also, you know, really competitively in the game. So, you know, they won from three, but they've pushing. I think, I mean, just we should probably just note, I think you were asking what the difference between this year and last year was, but this year, this round, the biggest winning margin of any of the games was the draw over the Crusaders at 10 points. I think the aggregate margin across all six games was like 35 points or something crazy. So, you know, you're getting super tight competitive games. And, you know, that's not just derbies, that's including cross conference. And I think that's probably part of it. Oh, this week they played the Rebels and
Rebels,
they lost to the
yes.
Rebels,
Yeah, they played in Chiefs
which
country
is, you
where,
know,
yeah.
yeah, I mean, there's apparently no one in the game, which is not surprising considering they were playing in the middle miles away at the last minute change. But, you know, like everyone's kind of off the blocks, out of the mark. It's only the forwards and the Crusaders that don't have a win yet, which is, again, a weird statement to make.
Yeah, for sure. And even the Force, I think, haven't looked too bad. You know, they were away at the Brumbies this last weekend and possibly should have won that. They lost by 3 points with a late score there. So yeah, it's I
And they
mean
were
it.
comfortably, I mean, they had a big lead over the Rebels as well. And that was kind of just a Carter Gordon intercept
Oh
on half
yes,
time to
yeah.
swing it around.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I mean sometimes I mean quality aside, like just having close games really does make a difference. And even in the Six Nations, which we were talking about earlier, like having those three games this weekend, which were all super tight, that makes for a really interesting competition. And as much as we like to say, you know, the rugby championship is the best, has the best teams in the world, and therefore is the best tournament in the world, sometimes it is about those close games. And if we are just beating Argentina and Australia too easily, I mean, it doesn't always happen, of course. That can take away a bit. So having this close competition, I agree, does help a lot.
Yeah, but I think we need to acknowledge what's causing the competition, you know. In the Six Nations, it's a semi-finalist playing against a bunch of quarterfinalists. Like, let's not big it up
Yes.
too much.
Yeah. No, I mean, like I said,
But
the best teams play in the Rugby
yeah, what I do really like about Super Rugby, and maybe this is just nostalgia coming through, and things go back to varsity days when you'd watch Super Rugby derbies on the Friday morning and stats lectures and stuff. It's just, I love a 9 a.m. New Zealand game. It's just a good way to start the day.
It is,
I've
yeah.
really been enjoying it. My colleagues shouldn't listen to this, but having it on in the background on Fridays.
Yeah,
But Saturdays, like just popping on the couch, making a lekker brekkie, watching some like just fun flowing rugby. Because let's be honest, Super Rugby is very attacking focused.
it's
As
fun.
much as we disagree with all of their head contact, ignorances and whatever, like if they do jaw. Which is fun, but we can. I don't think it helps their national game, but it is fun to watch.
Yeah, like for me, I think it was definitely the right decision for the South African teams to move over to the URC and just take that just big decision. But I mean, Super Rugby with the South African teams, and it was just my favorite competition. I'll
Oh,
always have good
hands
memories
down.
of it, and just the way that it worked, and as a student
There's just so many
going
great
to.
elements of,
Like whether it's on a Friday, like skipping lectures to go watch in the pub, or on a Saturday morning, just rolling up to SA Champs like super early. Always good memories, and yeah. But those
go
are
Scrumpy
memories
Jack
now.
and you do the 12-hour challenge.
Exactly.
You
So,
see if you can be there from 7 till 7.
and it's possible. Yeah,
Yeah, it was.
unfortunately.
Get your name on the board. No, but it's just that there's so many cool dynamics there because you had all the different styles. You had the proper rivalries. Obviously, we're growing those now in the URC. I still don't know why Adam's thoughts of the Dragons were the most hated team, but that's let Adam be Adam. But like you get the tours of 4 games, 5 games at a time, and it's just like, are you going to get a net positive when you're crossing the channel? Like there's all these cool little sub narratives to it, which I just really enjoyed. And then obviously, just there was just some cracking games between the two different sides. There's a lot of one-sided dominance as well, let's be honest. But there was some a lot of fun.
I was reading a story. It might make you from have some memories of better Sharks days, but not a happy ending. But where they had to go to, I think they had to go and play the Reds in the playoff, and they won there. And then they came back, and they had to play the Stormers, who finished top of the log. So they had to play in Cape Town, and then they won there. So they
And then
were,
fly all the way back across to the Chiefs.
But it was such an achievement just to win those first two playoff games. And then obviously the last one was a step too far, but it was an amazing year before that. So
That was an
those are the
incredible.
things.
That was probably, Super Rugby's biggest failing was like the travel for playoffs. Like I think the tours was worked fine. But a situation where teams flying from Durban to Brisbane to Cape Town to Waikato is just, that's just not tenable. That was definitely its biggest fault, I would say.
Yeah, for sure.
You can't expect a team to perform after that much travel. But it was, I mean, there was a team never won a, actually no, I lied, the Crusaders did. They won Joburg.
In Joburg. Yeah, you had to bring that up, didn't you?
I wasn't meaning to, but I was at that game, so
I wasn't. I
pretty
wasn't,
sad.
but I think my brother flew up for it with a couple of friends, and they went to watch. And
Yeah,
fuck,
it's all
yeah.
Quakkas, stupids,
It
air
was
challenge, yeah, red card in the
so
flesh.
early on the match. I think it was on Havili. And there was also the playoff against Hurricanes, which was in New Zealand. But what was most frustrating about that one was the week before. I guess it speaks to what you were saying about the travel, because the last pool game or the last game before that, they had to go to Argentina. Yeah, it was the last pool game. And so they sent
Oh,
a B
yes, I
team.
remember that.
Whereas if they didn't send a B team and they sent a full strength team, they would have finished top of the log and had a home final. But it would have made the travel a lot more difficult, and potentially they potentially would have lost on
They had
that
to play the
match.
Crusaders in that semi, I think, huh?
The
Or the
Crusaders,
quarter.
yeah, the Crusaders
I think
was
they
the
had to.
Yeah,
There's a
I
quarter
think.
of, there's one of there's a quarter of the semi.
Yeah, they smashed Crusaders in the quarters and then beat the Highlanders in the semis and then had to travel to Wellington and lost to New Zealand. I mean, lost to Hurricanes.
The Hurricanes, yes.
And the weather was so bad. So obviously, that Lions team, it didn't suit like them. And fuck, it was like a shit match. And what if? What if? Anyway,
So many what ifs.
enough reminiscing about Super Rugby.
I was going to say, speaking of subplots, what I think I'm really enjoying seeing in the subtext of the Super Rugby is the Australian fly-off race. You've got all five franchises has, well, except for the Reds, but all for the other four, all have fly-offs with some decent experience, all kind of coming into their age. Like I think 2, 3 years ago, all four of those guys kind of, they're all like 23, 24. They've all kind of played the same number-ish of Super Rugby games. Obviously, Noah and Donaldson have Wallaby caps now, and got Gordon. But then they've all kind of been coming through the system so much. But now that they all have got 3 or 4 seasons under them, they're actually joining some really lekker rugby, and it's going to be really fun to see which way they take it. And also, it's not just kind of Tom Lynott; he's playing some nice rugby as well. He's just a couple of years behind them. But all four of them have seen some really strong performances at times. I mean, Ben Donaldson this weekend was crazy good.
I haven't.
Carter Gordon the week before, really good. Noah in the first round was really good. Tane Edmonds just kind of been ticking along at a solid level.
Yeah, from what I've seen, I've been pretty impressed with 10 minutes so far. I haven't watched too much of the Force, but I know Donaldson's been scoring very well in fantasy. But I
Yeah,
agree. Yeah,
as I
all
said,
of that.
I think Donaldson was average the first 2 games, but this game he was on fire. And Noah had a really big state performance in the first game against the Rebels. So they're suddenly looking healthy there.
And I think it helps that Donaldson's gone to the Force so that him and Edmund can both play like consistently first choice.
Yeah. What's happened to Will Harrison? Is he still jogging around?
I think he was
Wasn't he
in.
meant to be? He was meant to be a big next Wild Card 10, and some of these two other chaps appeared.
I think he was injured because, I think him and Lolesio played in the same, the under 20 team that got to the final. I think Lolesio
Okay.
was 12 and he was 10, if I remember correctly. But I
I
think
can't
he's been
imagine
injured.
Lolesio was a 12.
He's
And there's
weird.
also Rishan Pasataha. I mean, he's also a strong 10 option. I mean, he's also quite young, but they've got a good crop there. We'll be interested. Yeah, I mean, obviously, the whole Schmidt rebuilding Australia narrative is going to be very interesting to see how it plays out.
I mean, no, he's got a clean slate, so. He's not
Yeah, and he's been
rushing
saying
like
good
he
things so
should.
far.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. So
And, yeah, there'll be plenty of time to discuss Australia later when we get closer to the test window.
a little bit of optimism, some green shoots coming through for Australia. They have suffered a lot
Yeah,
in the
no,
last
for
year or
sure.
so.
But, I mean, 2.6 million of unauthorized additional spending. Like, how?
We stopped feeling, or we started feeling sorry for Australian rugby fans a long time ago. It wasn't fun anymore to laugh at them, so
Yeah, no, it's just the shithole that just gets deeper and deeper there. But anyway, I mean, I'm definitely hoping things right themselves soon.
And I mean, it would be nice just to see at least one of the Australian teams really there and thereabouts at the top of the table come the end of Super Rugby, just to at least, be a bit more competitive. And so far it's looking good, so maybe even two.
No. Do you think Rassi is going to get a start?
I don't think so. I mean, Hurricanes are playing Crusaders this week, and normally you would say, oh, that's a difficult game. So perhaps this week is the week that he might get a start if they decide to rotate a little, given the Crusaders have looked so weak. But I wouldn't bet on it. I think Nwaholo and Nwabali have been really good and they want to keep the same combination. So you should
So I
probably.
should trade him out, is what you're saying.
It's
So, did you want him?
risky to trade him out. I just got Harry Potter. If you're interested in Harry Potter, I might give you a trade.
Don't want an Australian outside back that keeps tackling people in the air.
Also, we are still at war. There is no ceasefire, so perhaps,
Oh, right. Oh, well, I'm just accepting that's the status quo at this point. I wasn't joking when I said I've been verbally abused by four. Non-stop for the last 3 weeks. But I will be taking seventh place this week, so
It's a
I'm
big one.
manifesting it.
It's a big one. We'll see the teams. It's nice to get the teams nice and early on Wednesday.
Oh,
But
that is also such a treat. It's such a small thing, but you know what makes a big difference
yeah,
to
just the quality of
just my
life.
enjoyment and excitement levels. Yeah.
Yeah.
It also helps knowing most of the players. Like,
Yep.
I still somehow just know far more Super Rugby players than I know URC players.
Yeah, there's still just like massive holes in URC teams where it's just like, oh shit, Ospreys or Dragons or whatever, just release the team. Yeah.
Well, it's a very strong strategy is just don't draft Welsh players. That's the unless they scrum off, the centre's playing a scrum off, don't
Yeah.
draft them.
Or like Jack Morgan or someone that you know. But yeah.
But even like, people you do know don't score particularly well.
That's yeah.
Like George North or Josh Adams or Cuthbert, any
Well,
of those guys, none of them score well.
I think the last thing I want to say, Super Rugby related, is that I had Johnny McNichol for almost all of our URC, and he was one of the good ones because he didn't, he hardly got called up by Wales, so he always was available for the Scarlets, and he's pretty good URC level player. I think he's 34 or something already, though. So I have picked him up again in our Super Rugby
That
draft,
old, wow.
hoping that he can, improve the Crusaders, but also improve my team. We'll see
He
if he.
can draw fullback, huh?
Yeah, he's mostly a fullback, I
Because
think.
Fihaki is not
Ooh,
great.
yeah, I mean, Fihaki got me single digit scores 2 out of the 3 weeks, I think, so far. So let's hope
So
for.
like, if I remember last year, like they picked this like, random Pacifica dude against like the Rebels, something like, oh, this man's gonna cook.
But
Just
he's
like
hit.
every other outside back for the Crusaders, and did not cook.
But he
And
is
neither of their
highly
new
rated,
flowers, their
though.
flowers have also
Yeah.
been by who? I haven't seen him do a single good thing.
From under 20s, like,
But
yeah.
he hasn't got like a single good fantasy score. And as an outside back, that's like I can understand someone like Ned Hannigan makes 20 tackles and gets 16 points and fine, like that's he's a lock, like whatever. But an outside back, your job is to do flair shit, like. If
I
you get
hear
single digit scores, you are fundamentally not doing your job.
Yeah, you're just not doing anything, basically, only making errors.
Yeah,
Yeah,
pretty much. So it's just like, what
I
do you
know
know?
too well. I know too well. Like, it's been a
I mean,
frustrating season
who is
so
it?
far.
Someone else got like, oh, it's Talia. You got like minus 20 and still got 45.
The fuck? Exactly.
Like, that's what you should be doing. I mean, not the minus 20 part, but the netting
Yeah.
positive impact.
So actually, I think, and you and I are bottom of our Super Rugby love, so no one should be listening to what we have to say about Super Rugby.
Well, no, what you should do is whoever we've picked, they are not good. So I've picked Ned Hannigan and you have picked Chase for Hockey. So they are fundamentally not good players.
Yeah,
I then also
exactly.
have Gus Bell, though. He's the one shining light on my team.
Well, your first pick was Gus Bell, mine was Will Jordan, so that was a mistake.
Well, no, I mean, but Bell, I picked Bell because he's a prop differential. I went for someone where his average was going to be significantly better than the next options.
No, I'm not saying you made a mistake. I'm saying I did. Will
Oh,
Jordan.
yeah. Well, I did it like four times with the rest of my Crusader picks, so don't feel too bad.
Shall we finish off on a brighter note for me? Not such a brighter note for you, and move on to the URC.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get it over with quickly. Let's rip this band-aid.
So we didn't have any URC this week because of the Six Nations. However, if we go back 2 weeks ago, Lions hosted the Sharks in Joburg. I don't think Ant was able to watch this match, unfortunately. So let me just remind him what happened.
I just know
Final.
we sent a bunch of children.
Well, you say a bunch of children. I'd like to remind you, Bongi was starting. Quinny Oosthuizen, who's also a Springbok, was starting. Vincent Chituka,
Chicken.
James Venter, Grant Williams, Francois Venter. Apiwe Janci is a Springbok. Opelelela
You're
Fassie
stretching. You're
is a
grasping very
Springbok.
tenuously at Springbok. All those
Anyway,
guys have less than 6 5 caps.
what is a fact is the Sharks had more Springboks than the Lions. However, the Lions were 19-10 up at halftime, and then the Sharks scored no tries in the second half, and the final score was 40-10. Maybe one of the most notable things in the match was Bongi got a yellow card at around 50 minutes. This was just after he had been what he, I think, himself has described as rude to the referee, who was Amy Barrett-Tyrone in that match. So, Ant, I'm sure you must have seen the clips of that, even if you didn't see all of this game. And we
I didn't
mentioned
see the yellow
earlier.
card. I saw
Yeah.
the clips of him getting told off by Emi. And she's developing a reputation for that, huh?
Yeah, she
Very much
is.
playing the I'm not angry but disappointed card.
Yeah, because I think the quote in this one was like, I know all of your team probably have more experience, they have more URC caps than I do, but can you show me some respect? Because basically, yeah, he wasn't, showing her enough respect, as weird as that sounds. He was just arguing with every decision and not listening. And he was the captain, so he can talk to the ref, but he wasn't doing it in a respectful way. So, yeah, not a good
Yeah, it's not
look.
a good look.
Not a good look at all. But yeah, and not a good look for the Sharks, losing by 30 points to what some would describe as a weaker South African team. But based on this season, the Sharks are still bottom of the log behind the Dragons, Adam's favorite team.
The Sharks are doing better than the Lions in the Champion Challenge Cup, though. So that's what we're actually focusing on. We're here to get
Well,
into the Champions Cup for next year.
you
That's all
say
we're
that
focusing on.
the Challenge Cup is coming up in, still about 3 or 4 weeks. We're both in the last 16, so I'm not sure
Yeah, but
why.
we topped our pool. We topped our pool.
Okay, fair. So the Lions have to travel to Benetton, which is a tough game, whereas the Sharks are hosting Zebra. So I'll give you that. I'll give you that.
I think one of those is slightly easier assignment than the
Yeah,
other.
we're both playing Italian teams. One's home, one's away, but more importantly, one's Benetton, one's Zebra.
Yeah, that's the big difference.
So yeah, and we mentioned last time Benetton were doing really well. Unfortunately, they've lost the last couple, so they've got dropped down to eighth. But the Bulls are doing really well. They beat the Stormers quite comprehensively on that same weekend. So Bulls are up to second in the log, just behind Leinster. And then you've got Glasgow and Edinburgh. But a little bit worryingly, I guess, for Southern.
So our third and fourth, both are Scottish teams.
Yeah, and I was gonna say, like,
Wild.
a little bit disappointingly, the Bulls are the only South African team at the moment who are in the top eight. I mean, I know generally
Really?
in the end of the competition, South African teams have a few more home games, so I'd expect that to change. But right now, it's not looking great, other than the Bulls. Like, the Stormers are just outside, they're ninth.
Sure. I didn't realize the Stormers were that low. I thought they were sitting, I suppose they were sitting like sixth, seventh, eighth or whatever, and then the big loss. So
Yeah, only
yeah, that's a
one.
fall from grace. Hey? I mean, they're two home finals and not then the risk of not even making the playoffs. As you say, I think they will put it back at the end. And I don't think the Sharks are doing anyone favors by just donating wins to anyone that wants them. But yeah, that is concerning for the Stormers and for South African rugby in general. Like we want to see a strong Stormers team. Just like we want to see a strong Sharks team, considering they've got all of our Springboks. But yeah, good on the Bulls. Like it's good to see because I mean their first season a lot of promise. Last year they were a little bit off the pace, and it's good to see them coming back again, and back in so strongly as in sitting second, pushing Leinster, not just kind of the strongest South African team because everyone else is bad.
Yeah, no, agreed. Like, as much as I would love to see the Sharks keep doing badly from a Springbok perspective, it doesn't help. So let's hope some of the players find a bit more form towards the end of the season.
Yeah, that would be ideal. Should we chat quickly about the sevens, or do we just want to ignore that? But that's a thing that's happening.
We can quickly mention that the Blitz blocks are really performing poorly. I think the last tournament was just about as bad as it can get with like competing for the, what was it? Was it 13th, 14th or something?
Yeah, I was very far down.
So it's really not going well. The only silver lining I think is that the Olympics are the big thing this year, and while they haven't qualified yet, there is still the chance of qualification, so hopefully that will still happen, right?
But they've got I didn't realize that their GB's also pushing for that spot, and GB were in the final now with France. So,
Yeah,
in theory, any other tournament would be like, yeah, look, we can walk them. But this is not any other team, South African team. So, I see the coaches on the rocks and potentially getting fired, which is fair. He's has not had a good run. But it's still mad that we can go from winning in Dubai to just being horrible for the rest of the tournaments.
and I mean, there has been a lot of shift, like generally. Fiji and New Zealand are also strong, like the three of us, South Africa, New Zealand, Fiji, are traditionally, I think, the three biggest. Fiji also sacked their coach, or also, like, South Africa haven't yet, but they're also having a really
Oh,
bad
they have in
season.
the parliamentary, the prime minister says that if you don't have a like call a meeting with your coach and us, we're gonna intervene. Like,
Right.
imagine River Maposa intervening in the Sevens program.
Sounds crazy, but yeah, weird things have
But
happened.
yeah.
So yeah,
Yeah, so I mean,
Argentina are like the best team in the Sevens at the moment, which is strange, just because
very weird.
we're so used to
Look,
seeing.
they've been training upwards nicely for the last couple of years, but to see the kind of dominance they're having now is surprising. But yeah, it's going to be tough for us to qualify at this rate. But what hasn't been tough is stupid DuPont's transition into sevens. Like, what on earth? That's just so unnecessary. Like, honestly, it makes me annoyed. Because I was like, yeah, look, cool. He can transition and he'll be solid. But I wouldn't expect, like, I can see him doing well, but
Or
no,
at least,
arrives, wins.
like at least
Okay.
take a bit of time, have a few tournaments to get used to sevens. Not just straight in winning tournaments, like you say, just scoring
Yeah.
tries like in his first match, in his first tournament, scoring in
Dream
practice.
team in both of his first two tournaments. Like, France has won their first title in like 20 years. It's like,
Not fair.
what do
It's
you,
not fair.
how?
Yeah, this is
Just be
crazy.
bad at something.
Yeah.
No, it's nuts. He's a
He's
special player. Like, in
a freak.
some of the highlights of him were just, they're like Selvyn Davids-esque of just
Yeah.
him just making cool shit happen.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the type of player that he is, it does work, right? So it like suits it suits sevens as much as suits 15s, but I guess if you're that good, you're gonna make it work in any code. But
Yeah, but I
it
really,
seems
if you took
unfair.
like a Mwanga or someone and dropped him in, he wouldn't be nearly as effective. You
Yeah,
know what I mean?
agreed.
I don't
Agreed.
think, like, the only player that's maybe similar is like an Ardie Seville or something.
Yeah. I think
Like, he,
that's.
someone that's like really explosive and strong that isn't overly burdened. So I could see someone like an Ardie being good, but that's not
No.
many players that I reckon
Yeah.
would make the transition as well as Bond has.
I agree. That's fair. And
And, we just mentioned the last two best players in the world in 15, so maybe that's something to do
it's
with
just. Exactly. Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, if France at home in Paris for their, Olympics, if he can pull that off, that would be, it would go some way to. Helping the disappointment of going out in the quarterfinals of the World Cup. So, yeah.
yeah, definitely. I think that would be a big help.
Yeah. So, is there anything else that you're looking forward to or that you particularly wanted to bring up from the last couple of weeks? Or is it just more of the same, hoping the Sharks
No,
might turn the corner?
I think it's just as good. My World Cup hangover is mostly over. I've given up hope on the Sharks. As I said, I'm putting all the focus on the Challenge Cup. The URC season is dead, both in draft and in reality. But no, I think I'm excited. I mean, I'm getting excited for the Springboks to be playing again. I'm excited for the Ireland team to come here. That's going to be a proper two-match series. I'm really enjoying Super Rugby. I think it's just, yeah, there was I was very low, had low enthusiasm for rugby, I think, for a good couple of months post the World Cup, and it's nice that that's kind of coming back again. And I think it's, good that Test match rugby's back, Super Rugby's back, and it's kind of reigniting those sparks. Yeah, been good.
Yeah, and I think the Irish test or the Irish series here is like sort of the perfect one to have to, reignite the international season again. You said like you hopefully will be lucky enough to go watch the match in Durban. And then the New Zealand or the All Blacks will be playing in Cape Town. It might be tough to get tickets, but that will be pretty amazing. So we have an exciting year coming up for the Springboks.
Yeah, no, there's going to be some cracking games this year. I'm excited. It's going to be good. It's going to be good.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you, everybody, if you've joined us and you stayed with us throughout the episode. And we shall be back. We'll try not to leave it as long, but plenty to talk about, including the end of the Six Nations and some more Super Rugby and URC. So we'll see you again soon. Cheers.
Yes. Nice.